off the ball, thanks to Air.
Munster have made it to the semi-final of the European Rugby Champions Cup. Available to watch live exclusively on the Air Sport Pack.
You're welcome back. So we'll have Brian O'Driscoll in studio after 8. We'll also talk to Keith Wood. Gerry Thornley, though, of the Irish Times, was over in London this morning for the announcement from Warren Gatland, his line selection. So Gerry, 16 Englishmen, 12 Welshmen, 11 Irishmen, 2 Scots and a squad of 41, just 4 short of Clive's 45 in 2005. We'll get on to specifics, but broad strokes, what do you make of that squad?
Broad strokes, well, obviously, yeah, like you, the first thing I did was go down the national boundaries. We're all very parochial about this, four divided home unions, looking after our own first. But I think overall, when I look at the squad, Joe, I think from a parochial point of view, first off, I don't think Ireland got too many complaints about 11. It's a fairly healthy number. You'd have liked one or two more. I think Gary Ringrose is perhaps the unluckiest, given that just the way that the buys were picking up today, it looks like Jonathan Joseph might have been corralled back in the last election meeting yesterday, and maybe Gary Ringrose, as a result, missed out. Mm. I think if you look strictly at Six Nations form this season, you could say Gary Ringrose had a much better tournament than Jonathan Joseph with one standout game against the Scottish defence that just didn't defend that day. No doubt, though, that his footwork and pace, that's Joseph, that is, and maybe that a bit more experience has just given him the edge over Gary Ringrose. I think I would have quibbled about that one, but you know, overall, it's disappointed that neither Simon Zeebo or Keith Earls made the cut.
Sorry to interrupt. Have we any sense of how close either of those two were, or is that impossible to know at this point?
It's very difficult to know, but certainly when Gatland was speaking about it, he did name reference both Keith Earls and Donnacha Ryan, and I got the impression definitely from talking to him that Donnacha Ryan was certainly discussed at length, as was Keith Earls, as was Zeebo. So they would have been close, definitely in the mix, but they just lost out to the likes of Anthony Watson and Jack Noel and Elliot Daly. Close calls, I'm sure, but they've missed out as a result of that. I think Donnacha Ryan, you think that Joe Launchbury missed out as well, whereas Ian Henderson makes it. It's tough calling Donnacha Ryan. What probably edges it for Ian Henderson is versatility. If you go through this squad, Joe, the amount of players who can double up as centres come wingers, as out half come centre, and Owen Farrell's case can play both 12 and 13, Robbie Henshaw's case. The list goes on, particularly in the back row, kind of second row conundrum, where you've got Mauro Itoje and Ian Henderson, who can both play second row and number six. And you'll find that a lot of these versatile players will be asked to fulfill versatile roles on this tour, most probably. And that probably is what edged for Ian Henderson. And specifically, that Ireland-England game, the Ireland-All Blacks game and the Ireland-England game were two standouts and went a long way to contributing to these 11 being here. I think 8 of the 11 started against the All Blacks in Chicago. 9 maybe started against England. You'd have to think that Ian Henderson being called up for that game and calling the lineup was a big factor in his call-up. I think also Jamie Healy going down injured in the warm-up not only closed the door on him, but left the door ajar for Peter Hermani, and he burst through it with that fantastic performance and backing it up for Munster since. He screams midweek captain, as Jeremy Guscott says. He's very, very good in the opposition throw, which I think you look at the options at the line's disposable in terms of line-out options. They've put a big premium on that, on attacking New Zealand in their own ball and supplying good line-out ball. It's going to be a huge part of what they're about. And it's cram-packed with ball carriers as well, when the Irish loose forward trio and others there, like Billy Fudipoto and tight five forwards who can handle as well to try and match the All Blacks at that game. I think also Jared Payne forced his way in that day as well. It was just a reminder that, you know, when you think about it, Joe, whenever Ireland have had a big win, be it, you know, South Africa away, first test, 14 players, whether it was All Blacks in Chicago and then coming back in when they beat England, same when they beat France at the World Cup, Jared Payne has been an integral part of all those wins, whereas the defeats such as Scotland away this season, Wales away, the quarterfinal against Argentina, he's tended not to be there. So it shows you what an influential player he is. Teammates all speak very highly about him and his organisational skills on the pitch. And of course, he's a Kiwi, so he'd know the conditions pretty well. And ironically, Gatland let him go in his 1 year as coach at Waikato, and Payne relocated to Northland and relaunched his career. And here we are, many years later, Gatland surprisingly picking him for a Lions squad.
Yeah, here was Gatland talking about Jared Payne, Jerry.
You look back at someone like Jared Payne, who's been a little bit unfortunate with injuries, but he's played in some pretty big games where Ireland have won, and significant games. And sometimes you look at that and you look at players that have been involved in teams and big performances, and then you know, when he hasn't been there, it's sometimes you know Ireland haven't performed quite as well and have lost some games as well. So you know his win record against some big teams and Southern Hemisphere teams has been very impressive for Ireland, and so. And that win definitely against the All Blacks in Chicago, you know, has some significance. I mean, even to just show that, you know, that the All Blacks are human after all. You put them under pressure, they can make mistakes and they are beatable.
It's the first time since 1908 there's no Scottish representative in the pack. They have just two players in, Hogg and Seymour. Were the Scottish journalists standing up and walking out at any point, Jerry?
Didn't notice any Scottish journalists there, actually, Joe, to be honest. Their numbers have been few. Lions get together, be it in England or abroad on tour, in latter tours, and they're down again, no doubt about it. They are incandescent with rage, and understandably so, I suppose, when you think they've won 3 from 5 for the first time since 2006. And they gave Wales a good beating and beat Ireland. And yet, Wales and Ireland have 12 and 11, whereas they have only 2. But I think the Lions coaches would have been acutely aware of this and would have tried to pick Scott where possible, but when you look at it, there were other contenders such as Johnny Gray, again like Jonica Ryan and Joe Launchbury in a fiercely competitive area. Finn Russell, I think they've gone for headhats, who first and foremost can truck it up and tackle and organise defence and good carriers, strong kicking games. Russell has undoubtedly flair, but I think Farrell, Sexton, Bigger, they're more of the same ilk, and that's what they're looking to bring there. They don't want to be vulnerable in any part of the defensive line. And I just think, you know, I don't think this is really a biased selection. I just think they went with what they saw. There's been a lot of play made of play that the fact that the Scots had no voice in the selection, Joe. But then again, if they've had no voice, that's primarily because the Scottish Rugby Football Union twice turned down Lions' overture to have Gregor Townsend as one of the coaching staff. So if that's the case, stop their own making.
There's no Dylan Hartley, of course. Here's what Gatland had to say about that choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a discussion, you know, that Dylan's done a great job for England, you know, since he's captained the team. And you know, did we need that leadership? Did we need someone with that sort of fight and a bit of mongrel in him? You know, so competitive, and that, you know, that's the strengths of him. But when we discussed it, we felt like we couldn't leave out Jamie George and the way that the job he's done coming on off the bench, and the job he's done for Saracens. The coaches speak so highly of Jamie as a player, and then Rory Best and Ken Owens have had great Six Nations as well. So like there was a real genuine discussion about that. About the leadership and what Dylan can bring to the party, and you know he's very unlucky that he's not in the squad. But you know, so it would have been someone else if we had picked him and left him out as well. So yeah, it was a really tough call for us.
Yeah, he's not telling the full truth there, though, Jerry. I mean, that is not the key reason. I mean, as good as Jamie George may have been, that is not the key reason that Dylan Hartley is not on this flight.
52 weeks accumulated suspensions over the course of his career. Born in New Zealand, just. It would be a gamble, and they've decided it's a gamble not worth taking, and I can well understand where they're coming from. Rory Best and Ken Owens deserve to be there in form. Mm. And OK, you might dismiss the credentials of Jamie Jordan in that respect, but then again, one of the strong features of this squad, actually, is the amount of players who've been really proven impact replacements. I think it's one of the big factors in selection. Think of players like Ben Teo, Jamie George, others, you know, any, no matter what the back row, replacements would be in the test series, they will have impact in them. I think that they would pick good benches throughout. I think it's a big factor in what they're trying to do, because it's such a strong part of what the All Blacks are about.
I've two last short questions, and the first, it may not be possible to deduce from this vantage point. When you look at the squad that he's picked, do you see any tricks up the sleeve, or is this going to be standard Warren ball in terms of how this team are going to play potentially?
I do think actually, but he's not just saying this, but he is actually, the Irons are going to try and play some rugby. They want to play some rugby. And I think that's why you see such an array of ball-carrying mobile forwards. There's no doubt there's an emphasis on strong set piece, scrum and line-out particularly. I count, I'd say, a dozen of the 21 forwards who are known for their ball-carrying. That would seem to tell you something. And I think there are sufficient number, you know, a reasonable number of X-factor players. You can throw in Liam Williams, George North, Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly, Reece Webb, whoever you want to think of. There's a good few X-factor players there. Jonathan Joseph, although I'd be surprised if he makes the test team, but you never know. He might just kick down there with his footwork and pace. So I do think they actually are not going to play just as we call Warren Ball, just crashing up and playing off that. There will be a big premium in physicality. They'll have to take the game to the All Blacks. But I think that also another thing they picked very strongly on is good goal kickers. There's four really good world-class goal kickers in that squad with versatile players in the background as well, like Daly and Hogg and Conor Murray and others who can goal kick as well. So I think they're trying to tick as many boxes as they can, and they've succeeded in managing to do that, I think, pretty well, really. I think it's a very strong squad, a much stronger squad than 4 years ago.
Last question then, as you sat there in West London and watched the broadcast section and online and the print section, Warren Gatland can obviously throw some bombs into the press. His overall approach to talking about New Zealand and talking about the challenge, could you give us a flavour of like the message he's trying to get out? Is he playing the underdogs tag? Is he going there with a lot of confidence? What was the flavour of today in terms of what he was saying?
Believe that they can win the fifth test series. That's why I think, you know, a lot of the Irish players have beat the All Blacks, a good few of the English players have beaten the All Blacks in the past, and high achieving players with the real belief that they can win this. It's very positive, it's a very upbeat message from him. He talked about embracing the culture, that, you know, that they're going to get it right off the pitch, and this is like having, this is down to having good squad members pulling together. So there's going to be no done deals about the test team in advance going out there. It's going to be good competition for places. And I think also he talks very much about using his own experience as a New Zealander who's played and scored for the Waikato Chiefs when they beat the Lions 38-10 way back when, what was it, 89 or 92, whatever it was, 89, that, you know, he understands what the Lions are facing into, and he wants them to really embrace the culture. He's talking about movies. He's recommended that all the players and all the backroom staff watch to give them a flavour of New Zealand culture before they arrive there. He's talking about the way they accept the Maori challenges and the Maori welcomes on the first Sunday of the tour. I think he wants this squad to be as tightly knit and as au fait with New Zealand culture and to win over as many people they can with their knowledge of their culture, but also with the rugby they're going to play. So he's very positive, very upbeat. And when you think of it, I know there's a bit of negativity about the coaching staff that picked this Sergio, starting with Warren Gatland, but I mean, he has been a coach for whatever, 28 years. Most of that time has been at a test level with Ireland and Wales and the Lions. And vast majority of it actually has been in the Northern Hemisphere, yet he has that innate understanding of being a New Zealander and what that brings. And this is his third Lions tour as a coach. So if anybody's well qualified to take on what looks like a very impossible task, it is him.
Yeah, well, we'll read your thoughts on it all in the Times tomorrow. What movies did you recommend before you go?
Oh, shoot. damn you, anyway. That's actually for the daily section. That was for the broadcast section. Embargoed to 10 p.m. tonight.
Embargoed. I literally can't wait. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Cheers, Joe. Good talking to you. Bye.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With 4 minutes gone in the second half, the Lions are in a scoring position as the ball goes out to O'Reilly. He's over.
This is a psychological confrontation here. They want to get over us. They want to stamp their authority on us. It's an insult to us if they gave an inch here, a metre here.
Jordan Williams, the fullback. Oh, he turned well, and he did it. Williams hit that one straight and through, and that's it, a drawn match here, 14 points all at Eden Park, but the British Lions have won the series.
Find your own solace, your own drive, your own ambition, your own inner strength, because the moment arrived for the greatest game of your full life.
And Rory Underwood, has he got the letter in? Yes, he has. What a great try! Rory Underwood taking the chance as only he can.
Leading try scorer in the Six Nations in 2013. He offloads to Conor Murray. And they are on fire early.
We have Penny Dummies. And there is Sexton. Jonathan Sexton. Brilliant try for the British and Irish Lions.
now with this conclusive evidence, I think Brian O'Driscoll is assured of the fact that he was cheated.
I haven't seen it, and quite frankly, I think we should let it go.
Carter, Umaga again, Carter again. Tackling is strong, but it's out. And who's it with? It's with Sidibe, and you knew. You simply knew. This is one exceptional talent. And the final whistle. The series is won. And for the Lions, 1971 still stands in isolation. New Zealand, such a daunting force at home, have again lived up to their history.
Play for everything that we want that jersey to be and everything you've made it so far.
That whets the appetite. Keith Wood, hello.
Magnificent, isn't it? I was just listening to that. My father played in the first clip, actually, that Tony O'Reilly scored in the Lions in South Africa, in New Zealand in 59. And then the last clip is the very incredible Ian McGeachan. And what a voice he had. And I'll tell you what, you bought into every single word he said.
I can imagine. Your father was incredibly proud to play for the Lions. Wouldn't he wear the Lions jacket or blazer around the house a good bit?
Yeah, he was. It was, I think, of a time where you would maybe wear your medals on your chest sort of thing. No, he loved it. He was very proud of the Lions. And like, my father died when I was 10 years of age, and yet the memories I have of him are of a very big man, and he wasn't that tall, actually, but I thought he was a giant, you know. But he was only 5'9 or 5'10, but he was a big, burly man, you know, and he had toured all those years before, and it was a very big deal. I think it was a big deal in our house. There was a sense of rugby. There was a sense of Ireland, but there was a sense of Lions too, you know. So I like that idea. I like that fact. He brought a camera with him on the tour in 59. They went everywhere. They went to Canada first, then to Australia. It wasn't a separate tour. It was one tour, and then on to New Zealand, a 33-match tour, if you'd believe it. And he brought this brown camera with him. And I actually brought that on the 97 tour. I brought that camera with me just for the sake of it. Took a load of photographs, and it didn't work, which was unbelievably irritating. But I like that sort of, there is a bit of sentimentality about it, but it was also, it's a bit of family history too.
Yeah, for sure. Brian O'Driscoll is here, hello.
Hi there. I've seen Woody wearing his Lions blazer out in Limerick.
You have not. Of a time, I said, and I'm not that old, Draco, but thank you. Try and keep it serious if you can, Brian.
Today being the first day you haven't been selected in a Lions squad since you were 17.
I know. Devastating.
Yeah.
Was that an interesting quote? Why weren't you selected when you were 17? You'd have been one of the earliest Lions players, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's crazy when you think back to that and watching that 97 Lions tour as a schoolboy. And the thought about, if someone had said, you're going to be on the next one, you would have laughed them down.
Yeah.
Like, you're kidding me. I was struggling to get onto the Black Rocks senior cup team. And then, and you find yourself then 4 years' time in Australia, you know, out of your depth, but then, you know, you sink or swim.
Were you out of your depth? I have to ask that question.
I was at the start. That gave me a lot of confidence, that tour, because the standard of training, I was never one for really training, but I always loved the standard of training at Lions. It's a different level from club, different level from even international, because it's the very best, and if you have an off day, you can be made look very, very silly. And you've got people like Jason Robinson, that level of footwork, and you're trying to defend against that, and the intensity of it. You used to be exhausted coming off the Lions training sessions, just because mental fatigue along with physical.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind it. The backs did very little training compared to the forwards on that tour. We were wrecked after every single session. You were all chatting in the back line for half the bloody tour. We had a huge amount of forward anger directed towards the backs on that trip. I thought you had it pretty easy.
A lot of players make the point you made, actually. Raj comes back and talks about the Wilkinson effect on him. Seems to be a bit of an eye-opener for your generation, actually.
But particularly that tour, because we were a few years behind everyone else with getting into professionalism. We were still not quite paid amateurs back then, but we were very much learning as we went along. And seeing that England, particularly that England team, and understanding the strength, conditioning, expectation, even supplementation. We had no supplementation up to that point. So coming back from that tour and even 05, making sure that that was built into the IRFU regime and budget, that this has to be a part of training. This is aspects of our professionalism.
Yeah. Squad size. So you mentioned 05. Clive took 45 players in 05. 41 going this time around. Does that surprise you, Brian, or is that just the landscape these days?
I think it doesn't surprise me. It's funny, it's not that many off Clive, and he got pretty lambasted for
just
taking
four off,
a huge squad. It doesn't surprise me because with concussion protocols now, the landscape has changed from 4 years ago in that regard. So the return to play has to be adhered to, and so the knock-on effect is at times you're not going to have as many out on the training park as maybe you ordinarily would. You need 30 people training on any day. You need two teams. And I presume they're not going to do what Clive did 12 years ago and have two different sets of coaches or two different groups training at different times. You've got to tie it all together. So I'm not surprised because it's the most traditional place you're going to play rugby. Every game is going to be like a test match. And you get the sense that you're going to need all of those bodies and more and some reinforcements.
Yeah. 16 Englishmen, 12 Welshmen, 11 Irishmen, 2 Scots. Not to be too parochial, Keith, but let's talk about the Irish included. Jarrod Payne is the one that caught most people on the hop. I don't know if you were listening earlier, but we played a clip of Warren Gatland, and his logic was very sound, that Payne has been there for a lot of Ireland's best days of late and missing on some of the bad days.
Yeah, I think that's pretty relevant. And, I looked at it and I was surprised. I knew he was back, but I didn't think he was back, and whether he was back to the heights or anything like that. And I was surprised a little bit by it, but not in a bad way, I have to say. And, I'm guided a little bit by the fact there's times when I'm watching him that I don't see a huge amount, but every single player that has played with him just sings his praises. And there has to be more than what we see at times. And I do think some of the manner in which Ireland play at times doesn't show him off to his absolute best. So, I was surprised with it. I didn't think Ringrose would go. I just thought it seemed a little bit early for him. And so it's good to see another player go in that terms. But I'm sad for a couple of players and not really surprised by a lot of the rest, And, I mean, people were doubting that Peter O'Mahony would go, but I had absolutely no doubt whatsoever. The man is a nuisance. You want him in your team wherever you can. He causes havoc both with his athleticism but also his physicality, and his annoyance factor is incredible. And
Jeremy Guscott singled him out as a ready-made midweek captain.
I still think that's a ludicrous decision. Why would you have him as a midweek captain? I'd want him on the test team. You'd want him in any team you can, wherever you can get him in. So he's on the team or on the bench. Why would you be aiming to name somebody out as being a midweek captain? For me, that's kind of defies part of what happens with the Lions. You just get out there to get in the test team, nothing else.
Yeah, that was really. It seems, Brian, like a real sliding doors moment, that warm-up against England. Heasler pulls up, O'Mahony comes on, gets him out of the match. It hinged on that, it feels.
I think it did. He gets 20 minutes in that game. Ireland aren't as successful, not taking away from the potential impact that Jamie Heaslip could have had on that day, but Pete had a Roy of the Rovers performance, stealing ball at the line-out. He was the one that claimed the all-important line-out maul that Henderson scored his try off. He was a nuisance, as Keith said. He made it difficult for any clean ball. He was even tripping people up, behind the scenes, not getting caught. All the really important little niggle that you need when you're going to beat one of the best teams in the world.
And do you suspect Gatland is picking players with the midweek team in mind?
I think there's a few. I think he is going in with some sort of preconceived notion as to what his test team looks like.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time, he'll be open to interpretation as to how the first few games go. I think he'll have a pretty clear case as to what his test team is going to be, by game three. He'll have to coordinate to make sure guys get the appropriate rest time in the build up to that first test. I think I look at the squad and you have to be careful not to pick guys for the midweek team, because you know, automatically you're thinking that the guys that might have form at the moment or might be in possession of the jersey, you know, they disimprove or they get hit down by injury. You've got to have a squad where everyone feels as though they're in the mix. Mm. And that's an important aspect too. If you feel as though your last game is going to be the game between Test 1 and 2, you're going to switch off on the tour. That's the most dangerous week, that second last week.
Yeah.
Because you're nearly there, but there's no hope for you. I'm not going to get in the second test. They're not going to pick me for the third. That's when people switch off mentally.
Yeah, you talked up Ringrose at length, and I was sure at all these various functions where you were bumping into Gatland that you'd have twisted his arm fully by now. I thought O'Driscoll has...
Trust me, I was working Rob Cowley hard last
were
night.
You?
Yeah, we were at an ex-captain's dinner. For the inauguration of the new captain. It's a new idea that the Lions committee brought in, which is very exciting to be part of that for the future. But of course, it was Sam Warburton who'd captained before, and it was a bit anticlimactical the way it was done. It must be said, we just walked into the room and there he was signing some books. Like, are you the captain?
Right.
But
do you have any sense of how close Ringrose was or Zeebo?
I was talking to Rob Haley, and I'm sure Rob, in fairness to him, kept his card very close to his chest. He was just listening to what I said. I have a great relationship with Rob Haley, and we were pretty open with one another, and he was asking me questions. The Jarrod Payne point only became relevant last night when he started asking questions about him.
Right.
And I thought, okay, he's in the mix. He was asking what his best position was. I think that versatility is getting, you see, there's a huge amount of versatility, particularly across that back line, but also in the pack. I think that gets you on Lions tours. It can be work against you internationally because you can't nail down one position and you become overly versatile. Whereas on Lions tours, if you can play two or three positions, I think that's a real bonus. But talking to Rob Howley, I was saying how good, I was trying to tell him how good Gary Ringrose is and how he is ready now. I think they just felt that it was a fraction early. Even if it had come 6 months later, I think he'd have had a better chance.
Yeah. Keith, looking at the squad broadly, is this squad set up to play Warren ball or are there tricks up the sleeve?
I'm hoping it's a mixture of the two. I think it's very hard for Warren to step away from Warren ball too much, but there's better ball players in the back line. I also think, even though they've named Owen Farrell as a 10, I can't see him playing anywhere else but 12 if Johnny is fit. And I think that opens up a different style of play entirely. And, you know, you've got the coaches from the other countries as well. And you've Andy Farrell there who, you know, I don't think he particularly likes Warren ball as a style. So I would hope that we'll see a bit more to it, to be honest. I mean, I think you've got great pack of forwards. I mean, I looked at the team first or the squad first when it was announced, and I said, you know, there's a couple of guys I think are lucky to be in there. I think Scotland can feel pretty much aggrieved for the fact that they've only two in, and I think they can be upset for that reason. But it's some pretty good players there. I mean,
who deserves to be in from the Scotland team? In essence, I'm in agreement, but. You break it down, and man for man, I conflict my original point of view of only two Scots, because I think those Welsh boys, player for player, are better than their counterparts.
Well, I think WP Nell, I think, was one that if he gets himself fit enough in time, and I don't know whether that was the risk item in relation to it, I think you could have picked one of the Greys, but I would have gone with the second rows that they've gone with. I wouldn't have gone with the Scottish guys. I thought Finn Russell had maybe a chance and an opportunity as a 10 and having maybe put Farrell into the centres. And I do think there's an awful lot of back three players. Is there nine back three players in there? And I know that Scotland have two of those. And whether you would end up in having Tim Visser in as one of them as well, I don't know. There isn't a huge amount more, but you know that there's going to be that sense of being hard done by. They were a couple of points above Wales in the championship, and Wales have a host and Scotland have two. And it's... I thought Laidlaw maybe as another guy, but injury seems to get in the way for those. But I think we might see a couple more going, but they will be aggrieved. You know they will.
Listening to Jerry earlier, yes, the SRU are to blame for not providing a Scotland coach, but you have to have someone in there batting for you.
Absolutely.
You have to. When it comes to the 50-50 decisions, if you do not have someone that's fighting your corner, it's easier for everyone to agree with the coach, the national coach of the team involved. Mm. So, you know, in Wales cases, you know, bigger, Finn Russell, you know, the maybe it's not Alan Wynne or the Gray brothers, but those calls that are on the line, they're going to go with it's the
human,
majority
human
of the coach's opinion, because they're the one, they're the tried and trusted. And you've seen it with Joe Schmidt teams as well, that he's gone back to the Leinster boys because he's the one that he knows and trusts. Mm. And he knows the personalities as well as the player.
And I have no doubt whatsoever but that Gatland knows and trusts. And on the plus side for that is, for me, Ross Moriarty. He shows signs of something truly spectacular during the Six Nations, but he's still young, still raw, and yet he's one of those type of players. If the coach knows him well enough, and that's the wish that we'd have in this instance, that Gatland would say, he is a guy that will blossom and be a wrecking ball when we need him to be, both with the ball in hand and tackling. And that's where he is a player that some people wouldn't have agreed with, but you know, but I would. I would have said he was the right guy for it.
We've done great in the back row. O'Brien, O'Mahony, Stander all going. Ian Henderson, we thrilled. Like, it's an amazing thing for his career. Here's Gatland talking about the options he has at 10, by the way.
I mean, those teams are really going to fight hard for that position. And we just felt at the moment that, you know, Owen as a team, we know he can play 12, and that gives us that flexibility if we decide that we want to go there. And, you know, maybe at the stage and we come to the test matches, we're deciding that we're putting the best players in the park, and it could be, you know, one of the 10s and Owen at 12 if we feel that's the right combination. We know he can do a job. We just feel in New Zealand, you know, particularly with a lot of New Zealand players, you know, potentially coming down that 10 channel, he's a strong defender, particularly at 10. His goal kicking has been excellent. We think that, you know, talking to Neil Jenkins, that's potentially our point of difference. We've got four or five world class goal kickers, you know, guys that can make a difference. And, you know, someone like Bowden Barrett obviously is a outstanding player, but he's not goal kicking at the moment. And that potentially could be maybe a point of difference between us and the All Blacks.
Also, we have Sam Warburton talking about the captaincy, the weight of the captaincy. Here's what he said.
My form has definitely got better since I have relinquished the Welsh captaincy, but it's all been geared towards performance. And I thought the reason I wasn't captain was because I needed to make sure I got back on form. Now I feel I am back on form. I'm more than happy to take that role on as Lions captain. So I guess that's the black and white of it, you know. It's all about making sure you prioritise your performance. I think it's very difficult to lead a side when you're not, you don't feel you're hitting your straps. And after the Six Nations and a couple more games of the Blues, you know, I'm pretty pleased with my performances, which is what made that decision a lot easier then.
What was the weight of captaincy like, Brian?
Of national team
Lions,
captaincy, of Lions captaincy.
Lions,
okay.
Yeah.
It's
interesting, he says his form improved when he relinquished the Welsh captaincy.
Yeah.
Not connected, he's saying, maybe it's just a coincidence. But Lions just feels like...
It is a weight off your shoulder. Like, it's such a huge honour. So I had it in New Zealand, my second tour, but then Paul was made captain in South Africa, and I have to say I enjoyed that tour the most. It was great.
In a way that you...
Because I understood the role of the captain and what the pressure that comes with that, and you're way more so in the Lions, you're a focal point. You're out front and centre, and particularly with all the traditions down there, you know, meeting the Haka and accepting the challenge and the amount of speaking that you have to do, there's, you know, the amount of media work. It's challenging mentally and physically, on top of, you know, all the training and trying to be the best player, trying to make sure that you're guaranteed your spot too. So it's a real challenge. And you know, did I nail it when I was 26? Definitely not. Would I have done it massively differently 4 years later? Of course.
What would you have done differently?
I think you know, you look at the dynamic of our tour, the fact we were all, you know, rooming on our own, how, you know, I would have been a stronger captain. I probably would have challenged more things that maybe Clive had put my direction.
As in duties that he gave you?
No, but asking me, you know...
Your opinion.
But him saying his opinion and me just... following suit with what he thought. I backed him an awful lot, and easily retrospectively look back and see where we went wrong.
Yes.
But I'm trying to think back to 12 years ago. Did I question one or two things at the time sufficiently? Probably not.
Mm.
And I think that comes with experience of being captain. I was only captain of Ireland for 2 years at that stage.
Yeah.
And you're still a young guy at 26.
He's the World Cup winning coach.
Yeah, it's very hard to challenge someone that's had that success and that it's that that dynamic has worked really well for England. Why won't it work for the Lions?
Yeah, I guess that is something Warburton and Gatland have. They have, I mean, they've built up that relationship.
They do. And I think the thing with Sam is that, yes, he'll have to earn his place. I think seven is one of the more open positions. Even when Warburton wasn't being touted as captain, no one was really putting their hand up. Sean O'Brien had a relatively quiet Six Nations. James Haskell was coming in and it was only coming back from form.
Yeah.
So, Tipperick actually played a bit of a mixed Six Nations, not brilliant at times. He'd shown much better form the first half of the season. So I think all of those things lent itself well to Sam fitting the role. I also do believe that if he doesn't make the test team, he won't be the sort of guy to throw the toys out of the cot.
Which is important.
Which is vitally important.
Yeah. Keith, I was reading Dick Best, former Lions coach, was talking about Sexton and, praising him ultimately and talking about his bravery and his reluctance to pull out of a tackle. But he was saying, and I don't think he took much joy in saying it, but he was saying he thinks Sexton will be lucky to make even the first test and he's worried about the cover at out half. What's your thoughts on that?
No, I think there's plenty of cover at out half. Will he be targeted? Of course he will. It's funny, I get critical of Johnny Sexton at times because, he's a cranky enough guy. A lot of tens are, when you think about it, are cranky. Owen Farrell is a cranky guy. Actually, Ron Nogara was an unbelievably cranky guy and Brian played outside him for a long time. Johnny seems to be as well. And it isn't about not getting involved in the tackles and everything. I still would rather he tackled a bit lower because I'd rather he stayed on the field longer. And that's only occurs once or twice or three times in a game now. And if he can take those out, I just think it lowers the risk a little. But you don't want him smashing into rucks too much. And even though he'll want to do it, you still want him to be the leader marshalling all the time. And it's kind of hard. Can he tone that back a little bit and would it make a beneficial difference? I don't know. But for me, that's my kind of gut feeling. And maybe that's something that Dick Best is trying to come across. I'd like to see him in all the tests. I think we have an infinitely better chance if you have a guy who's like a master tactician on a field. And if you had Owen Farrell outside him, I think we are in a stronger position than without him. Mm. So I'd like him to... And this is the difficulty, and you be careful what you wish for. If he could tone down some of that stuff when he gets angry, is that necessary for him to perform? Mm. And does he diminish as a player if he takes it away? And I don't know. And Brian, I'd be interested in what you'd say because you played outside him for a long time.
I think he's calmed the last couple of years. I don't know whether that's fatherhood or whether it's just the realization that he's the key figure in that back line that has to be a calming influence. I think you still see the rattiness every so often, but for the most part, I think he seems much more collected. I still see him throwing the debts there, but not so much shouting at people, which he used to do. If you look at those three tens, I think they could be triplets, the personality of them.
Bigger's the same, is he?
Exact same.
Right.
Narky and always challenging. He's passionate about getting the maximum out of himself.
Yeah.
And he challenges for everything going. And I think Farrell has really controlled his emotions too. I think he was a fiery personality and he's matured very much in the last couple of years. So I think the three of them are going to get on great.
Yeah.
They are going to be targeted though.
Well, so speaking of targeting, you're going to be asked this question, I would think, a lot for the next couple of months when it comes to...
Which question is that?
Yeah, which I'm sure you'll enjoy thoroughly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'll get ahead of the pack. So you obviously, do you feel you were targeted or you were just wrong place, wrong time?
Wrong place, wrong time.
No, but really?
Honestly, no. Genuinely. I'm not saying this just because this might be transcribed and sent down to the New Zealand Herald or whatever.
Okay, I hear you.
I genuinely do believe that... they were got over overexcited about trying to make a marker. I was counter-rooking, in the first minute, trying to make sure that everything that they fought for was difficult, and they decided to send a message back that it wouldn't be easy. I also think that they didn't both realise that each of them had a leg, and that it And as it transpired, it was pretty bad, but they didn't, I wouldn't say they jumped at accepting that responsibility immediately and subsequently.
I've no doubt, though, that they saw it was you, Kent Arukin, and thought, aha, bonus.
I don't know. But, like, these things happen in hundreds of seconds. Like, I don't think you go, hang on, who's that? You know, no blonde tips, couldn't be him. No, there's none of that.
So do you think it's in the it's going to be in their mind to lay down a marker and Sexton will be high enough up on that list?
Like, no? 10, every 10.
Yeah.
You know, because they're the focal point. Dan Carter was targeted in every game that he ever played, because if you can injure them in some capacity, you know, legally, ideally, or slow them down, or, you know, if someone get a dead leg, means that they're likely to be the goal kicker, and that, you know, you're going to get an inferior player coming onto the pitch if they have to leave. Mm. So, of course, you're going to have any one of them that plays at 10. If Dan Biggar's the starting 10, he's going to be targeted.
Yeah. I suspect, Keith, it won't be quite as dramatic in 05, the targeting. I would hope not, anyway.
Well, the game has moved on hugely if that happened now. And I remember talking at the time, and sorry about this, Brian, but I said the only part of that that really was bad was the last half a second when they were pinning your head into the ground. Up until that, it was kind of grand, you know, and it was the ball was gone. But in real time, when you're hitting a ruck and trying to ruck someone, exactly as you said, yeah, you're going to kind of fairly smash him. Absolutely. And I don't know if there's anything wrong in that. What's wrong is the tipping over and pinning into the ground at the end. But with the laws as they stood at the time, there was a case to answer, and the whole thing that happened on that match was a joke. The fact that no case was called was wrong, and that heightened the sense of injustice with it. But I thought within the law at the time, they would have got away with it. And but if that were to happen now, they would both miss the rest of the tour.
Mm.
They'd both be gone for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks.
Yeah, both. And one suspects that's in the players' minds these days.
I think the game has changed to the point, and for the better, actually. And, you know, we still have some issues, and we still have some problems with the tackle line. But even if you notice, there was a readjustment at Christmas. And ever since then, the amount of the big high hits compared to the previous 6 months are drastically reduced.
Okay.
So I think, of course they'll be targeted. That's the nature of it. Yeah. You know, this is hard physical, purely competitive, aggressive game. And there's no point saying you're not targeting somebody. Of course you are. When every time you line somebody up to tackle them, you target them. Now, you would hope that the referees will get their act together and say that, listen, we have to watch for the late hits, the series of late hits, the way that this is constantly done. And that targeting is cowardly, and that's different.
Lads, we'll have plenty more time to talk about what should be a brilliant couple of weeks for rugby. Thanks a million, Keith. Cheers.
Cheers.
Keith Wood there, and it is gone half-time in the two Champions League games. Monaco are 2-0 up. I'll get you a score from the Nou Camp. It's nil all still between Barcelona and Juventus. And up next, Brian O'Driscoll is staying with us. He is accepting the challenge. Boom, 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 boom. Gets to swap. Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to proofread this. Brian O'Driscoll gets to swap, accepting the challenge of the Haka and taking on the Marys, with going head-to-head with another proud warrior, Kenny Cunningham. It's a Question of Sport Captain Special next.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to AIR for heart-stopping moments from the Premier League, FA Cup, Formula One and more. All on AIR Sport.